Welcome back. For those of you joining just now, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. We are podcasting our show. You can find out more information at Your Call on KALW.org. You can also listen to past shows there. And if you have a show idea for us, you can drop us a line at yourcall@KALW.org, or you can call us anytime at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And now we're going to discuss the Trump administration's attack on science and scientific research. Over the past 3 months, we have witnessed an unprecedented attack on science, including cuts to federal research contracts and training grants, termination of National Institutes of Health staff, and a general breakdown in the process for dispersing new funds, along with major cuts to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The list goes on and on. So what does this all mean for the future of science in the U.S., the future of science research, and what is being done to defend science and this research that depends so much on federal funding? Well, to help us answer some of these questions, we're very pleased to be joined by Emma Courtney, PhD candidate at Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory in New York and co-founder of Stand Up for Science, which organized last month's Stand Up for Science March across the country. Thanks so much for joining us, Emma.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So, Emma, this has really been an unprecedented time for people who are working for the federal government and the tens of thousands of people in institutions that have historically been supported by the federal government for this research. Did you expect the administration's wholesale assault on science to be occurring in such a short time? I mean, we're just 3 months into this administration.
I don't think anyone saw this coming. And I think scientists over the last couple of years have seen these broad conversations about, you know, scientific hesitancy around vaccines and climate change and these bigger issues. And so I think we knew that there would be some of that coming back up in the current administration, like there was during his first term. But I don't think anyone saw coming kind of the funding cuts or the censorship of science or the cuts to specific diversity programs. Like, those were all, I think, very surprising to the scientific community.
And has your research and funding been affected?
My funding specifically has not yet, but I don't have an NIH grant that is supporting my work. And so I know of colleagues who have been applying for some of these NIH fellowships and have not heard about anything back in normal times that they usually would. And so my funding hasn't been cut specifically, but I definitely have seen people around me have been affected personally.
Yeah. And in terms of those folks that you have heard of being affected, any examples, any types of promising research that is now being held up that you want to cite?
Yeah. I mean, I'm working in cancer research. And so across different cancer labs, I know of people who have applied to specific tracks that are aimed at getting people who are traditionally underrepresented in science into these fields. And they're super talented and passionate about their work and do incredible research on many different types of cancer. And they're kind of in limbo right now with where the NIH is at with funding those opportunities.
Well, and I also just note that we have new information now that staff at the National Institutes of Health have been instructed to freeze all agency funding awarded to Brown University and several other institutions. The email instructs employees to, quote, not provide any communications to these schools about whether or why the funds are frozen. So there's no information as to the reason for the freeze, but this seems to be just another example of this kind of assault. Do you have any quick reactions to that news?
Yeah, those funding cuts to specific universities is something that is really surprising as well, just because we're seeing a lot of things done that are really restricting academic freedom, and institutions aren't really left with many ways to respond to that when, if they comply, they are getting additional funds cut. But if they don't comply with the different guidelines that are provided by the administration, that they're also getting their funds cut, like regardless of kind of what they do. And so I have a lot of empathy right now for people who are leading these institutions and trying to figure out what is the best thing to do.
Yeah, very challenging time for sure. Now, you, as I mentioned, you were the co-organizer of Stand Up for Science. And last month, you helped organize a nationwide protest to oppose the Trump administration's sweeping cuts to scientific research and mass layoffs. And we had protests here in the San Francisco Bay Area and at UC Berkeley. Can you tell us what was the thinking behind this idea of starting this organization and organizing these protests?
When the administration first came into their term, I think a lot of scientists were really struck with how quickly all of this was moving, and especially from a student perspective, I wasn't seeing a lot that I could do to kind of prevent what was happening or have a bigger change. And I recognized that in my community as well, and with other people who I combine like was able to talk to online, and those were the people that kind of formed this core group of organizers for the protest, were five students, including myself, that were unsure of what to do and how to best respond, wanted to do something to kind of advocate for science, and then also wanted to kind of look to what's worked in the past. And so we were looking at the March for Science from 2017 and 2018 that were kind of in response to the first Trump administration, and seeing that that was we all had a really favorable outlook on that. We thought that it had been something that got a lot of people talking about science and talking about the importance of evidence-based decision making and kind of put a focus on scientists as reliable communicators. And so we were inspired to do something similar. And we in that process, we actually talked to some of the organizers of the original March for Science, and they had given us some really great tips about how to kind of make it a little bit more actionable, a little bit more rooted in policy. And I think that also was something that was really easy to do right now when we have such clear threats to this American scientific ecosystem.
We're speaking with Emma Courtney, PhD candidate at Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory in New York and co-founder of Stand Up for Science, which organized last month's Stand Up for Science March that we were just talking about all across the country. I'm Ethan Elkind, and you're listening to Your Calls One Planet series. The phone lines are open if you have thoughts, concerns, experiences with these cutbacks for science research, for support for science that we're seeing from the Trump administration. The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email with any questions or comments you have for Emma to yourcall@kalw.org. Emma, I wanted to ask you about Harvard University really being the first university to stand up strongly against Trump administration demands to comply with various, policy objectives, ideological needs. And the university stood up and said no after other universities, famously like Columbia University, really caved in response to these demands from the Trump administration, using essentially billions of dollars in federal grants as leverage. So what do you make of Harvard standing up, and do you think that will change the dynamic now between universities and the federal government?
I hope to see it change the dynamic, and I hope to see other universities kind of come into coalition with Harvard. I know we've seen some discussions of like mutual defense pacts for academia, and so institutions kind of banding together and say that they will combine legal services and combine different approaches to standing up for what they are doing against the Trump administration. And I think with that, we really are just trying to protect academic freedom and protect the ability of scientists to be able to do the work that they find is the most impactful in their communities, and the ability of people to study what they think is most impactful. And we're seeing a lot of these demands being focused around having balanced ideologies in higher education and kind of restricting specific viewpoints or field of study. And I think that's harmful to the broader academic establishment and academic freedom as we know it in the US.
I'm glad you mentioned what some of the demands are from the Trump administration. What do you think is ultimately the Trump administration's end game here?
I don't really want to theorize about what the end game is because I'm not sure I have a great idea of what it is. I think there is some elements of weakening academia and kind of the ability to study things as we kind of have historically enjoyed it, but I'm not sure what exactly the goal is.
Hard to know, I suppose. So I appreciate you taking an open mind, a true scientific approach, right? Look, wait for more evidence to find out what their approach could be. Well, there are people who are speaking out. Do you get the sense that some of these scientists who are speaking out are getting support from their administrations? I imagine it's a fairly diverse environment out there, but what are you hearing in terms of how university administrators are reacting to their faculty and staff speaking out?
I think as the threats become more clear and more widespread, I think there is almost a sense of more support for people who are speaking out, just because it's harder to think that the cuts won't affect you in some way as they kind of compound and as more and more institutions and research programs are being affected. I know initially when we were putting together Stand Up for Science, there was some hesitancy of, like, why is this a student-led organization and why aren't institutions speaking out against this? And I think part of what the students were able to do in the beginning was have that quicker response because they were seeing their futures, the like future landscape of science and their place within it really changing. But I think it's something now where a lot of different institutions and scientists and people in academia are coming together and seeing that there are threats that will affect them.
It seems very powerful that you are a student, a PhD candidate in the sciences, and that this is an organization, really focused on the up and coming generation of scientists. So, how do you think this is going to affect the sort of this next generation of scientists? What is at stake for young scientists, and particularly for women and minorities studying science, given the administration's attacks on any program that might benefit diversity among the scientific ranks?
I think it's going to be really harmful to young scientists because you're getting a message that science is only a place for specific people. And we're seeing a lot of the different programs that traditionally have been aimed at getting people into science, kind of these pathway programs, those are being really affected right now. And so I think about, I'm 2 years into my PhD, and in undergrad, I had done specific research internships that were aimed at getting some, like, I didn't go to a school that had a great research program, and so I did summer internships to get into my grad school. And we're seeing those summer internships be cut, and a lot of those are focused at getting underrepresented people into science. We're also like seeing just a lot of attack on the questions that people are able to study. And so I think if you're not able to study what is important to you and your community, there's almost less value in going into this field.
And then what about international students? We've seen visas revoked. We've seen challenges for students to just enter the country even when they have a valid visa. What are the impacts that you're hearing on those international students studying science? And if the US becomes a hostile environment for them, what do you think the fallout might be?
I do think we're going to see a larger movement of scientists away from America if this continues. And that's both American-born scientists and international scientists. And I think there's already been conversations I've been hearing of students who want to come study in the US who are second guessing that just because of the current situation and kind of the attacks on academic freedom and also the uncertainty that their visa could be revoked at any minute for reasons that they're not quite sure about. And so I think we're seeing a shift in kind of the way people think about American higher education.
Internationally, you mean?
Yes, and in America.
And so, which countries do you think might end up benefiting from this? Where is this scientific research going to shift if it's not happening here and we're not able to attract international students anymore?
Well, I know China has been kind of catching up to the American scientific productivity and probably surpassing it. It's surpassed it in some fields at this point. And so I think we're going to see countries that continue to invest in their science as America historically has. We're going to see them kind of take forward scientific fields in a way that they will be able to with that funding. But I think we've also seen in some countries in Europe, specific visa programs and funding opportunities for American scientists who are looking to establish themselves in Europe. And so I think we also, like, there are governments there that are recognizing what is happening and using it for their benefit.
And as we just think about the long-term impacts here, because science, the development of new vaccines and cures for things, that takes a long time to develop. What are you most concerned about when we think about the long-term impacts of gutting our scientific research in this country?
Absolutely. I think when you think about the science that is funded by the NSF and the NIH and NOAA and these federal funding agencies, it's often science that has a bit of a longer term horizon than things that are funded by industry or specific foundations. And some of that is that we often fund higher risk projects with that. And so the NSF and NIH are funding science that might not be as immediately applicable to disease, but has the potential to be very applicable in the long term. And so when we're seeing grants being cut on basic research, we're kind of losing out on that long-term horizon of what science will be able to accomplish. But we're also seeing grants being cut on the translational therapies that are being studied right now of cancer patients that, are currently in treatment. And we've seen clinical trials be cut. We're seeing kind of across the board of this kind of path of discovery, there's cuts across all of it. And so I think that we're going to see, cuts in both the short and long term.
Well, it's very sobering stuff. And I know you're organizing another protest in defense of science and involving leaders of faculty and staff and students who are all focused on academic freedom, open inquiry, free expression. Can you talk about upcoming events, upcoming protests?
Yes, so we are hosting events on the end at the end of the semester across the different universities to kind of bring attention to the science cuts right before universities are leaving for break. And then we also have been working in coalition with movements like 5051 and Indivisible to bring together across different topics the fact that science goes hand in hand with public health and with democracy and with these bigger picture ideals that we're also seeing being attacked under this current administration.
Well, we'll put some of the events, or at least the website, on our website at your call, the KALW.org webpage. So, Emma Courtney, PhD candidate, Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory in New York, and co-founder of Stand Up for Science, which organized the Stand Up for Science March last month across the country. Just want to thank you for joining us on Your Calls One Planet series. And thank you for the work that you're doing and for bringing attention to the cause of scientific research, academic freedom across this country. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's our show. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, you can visit our website on the KALW.org page. You can also listen to past shows there or sign up for our podcast so you never miss an episode. We're also on social media, so you can follow us there and email any show ideas and feedback to our email address at yourcall@kalw.org. Malihe Razazan produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind, and it's your call.